Welcome to a special July 4th edition of the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm Tracy Lynn. Today we mark our nation's independence from Britain. The Second Continental Congress, made up of representatives from the 13 colonies, met in Philadelphia starting back in June of 1776. There was certainly a struggle to get to a unanimous vote on independence, yet John Hancock, president of the Congress, insisted upon unanimity.
Don't you see that any colony who opposes independence will be forced to fight on the side of England? We'll be setting brother against brother, that our new nation will carry as its emblem the mark of Cain.
National Park Rangers Matt Eiffel and Adam Duncan now work at Independence Hall, which was known as Carpenter's Hall back in 1776.
So if you think about the Declaration of Independence, often we think of this kind of simple, straightforward story. And one of the great things about history, whether you're visiting a place like Independence Hall and talking about the people that were there in 1776, is that everything's always more complicated than it seems. We have our kind of legends and tales that we tell, but the reality is everything is difficult. So, for example, we look at the Pennsylvania signers of the Declaration, which there are nine, but only four of those nine were actually at Independence Hall the first few days in July. Pennsylvania changed half of its delegation in mid-July, having had some elections in early July. They changed some of their delegates, and they got a more friendly cast of characters to the idea of independence. So there's actually five signers from Pennsylvania that weren't really there when we were doing the debating. And then New York has a secondary kind of complication in that a lot of the New York government, especially New York City, is very conservative and loyalist in some cases, and they're kind of opposed to independence to a large extent. So they don't give any permission for their delegates to vote when we're voting on the Declaration of Independence. So we have the voting on those first days in July, and there's only 12 states actually voting because New York is abstaining. The New York guys that are sitting in Independence Hall want to vote. They want to go after this idea of independence, but they're kind of dependent upon their instructions from back home. And so it's not really for almost a week until the New York delegation finally gets the permission to go ahead and approve independence.
There's a scene from the musical 1776 that I always think of for this, when John Hancock gets ticked off.
Abstains courteously,
Mr. Secretary, New York abstains courteously.
And John Hancock finally has had enough, and he's like,
Mr. Morris,
what goes on in New York?
New York always abstaining. And I love the thing where he says,
I'm sorry, Mr. President, but the simple fact is that our legislature has never sent us explicit instructions on anything.
Never. That's impossible.
Mr. President, have you ever been present at a meeting of the New York legislature? They speak very fast and very loud, and nobody listens to anybody else, with the result that nothing ever gets done.
Would you say that was true?
I mean, you know, artistic license. Yeah, I think there's a amount of truth in that. I mean, in the stories here at Independence Hall, I mean, even as late as the Constitutional Convention, the New Yorkers are always kind of going to their own beat of their own drums. So, yeah, New York's always kind of one of those that's always a bit of the outlier. So I think in that moment in the movie and the musical works so well because it does kind of fit into the way I'm sure others would look at New York, and probably a lot of New Yorkers looked at themselves as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Five men from New York eventually signed the Declaration of Independence. Today we have time to learn more about just a few of them. We're going to start with Francis Lewis. Would you tell us about him?
Yeah, Francis Lewis is one of the older signers. He's about 6 or 7 years younger than Benjamin Franklin, who's the oldest. So he's into his 60s. He'd actually been born in Wales and was orphaned young. And then he ended up getting into business, was educated in London, and his business carried him in trade to Philadelphia and New York, and he ended up settling in New York. And one of his interesting backstories is during the French and Indian War, he was supplying uniform parts and clothing to the British Army, which, of course, the American colonists were fighting against the French in Canada with the British. And he was captured by France and imprisoned for a while. then after the war, he was given land in America kind of as a reward, and he slowly turned to the cause of the revolution. He attended the Stamp Act Congress when the Stamp Act came about, protesting that. Because New York was rather on the loyalist and conservative leaning in the 1770s, we kind of have these outside of the New York government groups that are forming. And a lot of guys that they're going to send to the Continental Congress are sent by counties. And there are these various committees that are formed to try to remake the state more into the view of what would become the United States. And he sits on some of those committees. And we talk about people that suffered a little bit, and he really does, because his house was destroyed. His house on Long Island was essentially destroyed in the fighting. We often look at the founders and say, oh, well, you know, the British were targeting them. And there's a degree of truth in that, but it's probably not so much the British as you know, other Americans leading the British to people that are sort of viewed as the enemy. Because as in any war, there's a division, and it can get pretty unpleasant back and forth between the loyalists and the patriot side. And so there's guys certainly going to the British and going, hey, that house belongs to so-and-so, and he's kind of not with us. And one of the really sad things for Francis Lewis is his wife was actually arrested by the British and held for a while, and then she died a few years later, and he sort of blamed that captivity period as something that negatively affected her health. So, you know, that's definitely someone who, you know, and it's probably more the war than just his signing of the Declaration, but certainly his side in that story kind of had a negative impact on his life.
Yeah. At the end of the Declaration, these men pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. They really gave that. I mean, some of them more than others. But if they would have been captured by the British, they could have been hung for treason, right?
Yeah, they could have faced a trial and imprisonment or even death, absolutely, depending how that trial went.
And I also think it's important to note that during the debates of whether or not to declare independence, some of these guys were still holding on to reconciliation and hoping that the king will step in and come to his senses. And independence was a matter of last resort. But after the vote for independence, after Richard Henry Lee's resolution passes in the Assembly Room of Independence Hall, they pretty much affirm their positions and decide what a few of them, like Phil Livingston, he kind of held on a little bit, but then he changes his position and says, no, we're going full throttle. We passed it, and now we're going to support it. So you kind of see some of the people who were diehard against independence kind of fade out after the resolution is passed.
Yeah, very interesting point. By the way, this might be a good time to talk about what was the Declaration of Independence. In the musical, again, I always think of it, it was kind of like a stalling tactic. Well, what is this for? But would you maybe share just a little bit about what it was? It was being sent to King George III of England, and it was declaring why they wanted to be independent. But would one of you share more about that?
The big principle behind the Declaration of Independence is to list the reasons to a candid world on why they're declaring independence, why the war is going on. You know, there's 27 reasons in the Declaration of Independence. We look at, you know, the beginning, we hold these truths to be self-evident as the most important. But when it's read, they're looking through all the reasons for war, those 27 indictments, so to speak, against the British taking away property, capturing them and sending them to Great Britain to stand trial amongst their peers, all this stuff they disagreed with.
Homes entered without warrant, citizens arrested without charge, and in many places free assembly itself denied.
Go through and read the entire Declaration of Independence, because it's really outlining to the world why they're declaring independence, their grievances against the king and the British government. And it's a pretty important document. I mean, it changes really world history. And that's why Independence Hall was declared a UNESCO World Heritage Site by the United Nations UNESCO group, because it does have significant impact on human freedom throughout the world. And we would see that in the centuries to come after the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, it makes me think of China, Tiananmen Square. What is it, 1989, where these young people died. They were holding copies of the Declaration of Independence, standing up for freedoms in their own country at that time.
Yes, and even Ho Chi Minh of Vietnam, he studied the Declaration, and he used it in a different way, but he felt that the way his system of North Vietnam and eventually South Vietnam was embodied in the Declaration, that the way that you make everybody equal was through communism.
Wow.
To build on some of the other points Adam just made, is that we talk about how some of these guys suffered, and it's not just declaring independence, it's this whole war that's going on. And that's the thing, the war is happening in New York in 1776. It'll come down here to Philadelphia in 1777, which is where a lot of that firsthand suffering is going to happen to not just the politicians, the signers, but to the soldiers and their families and to the people that are actually fighting. And so the Declaration is definitely also that moment where the British have just started to invade New York when we're declaring independence in Philadelphia. And it's literally that thing we can hold up and say, this is what we're fighting for. These ideals, these are our goals. And this is why we need people to support this cause. And as Adam said earlier, it is one of those things that it does kind of help people to see exactly what the state is and that they do start to change some of their opinions and views, because that's this very convincing list of reasons right in front of you as to why all this has to happen.
Absolutely. What can you tell us about Lewis Morris?
Well, like a lot of the New Yorkers, they're kind of wealthy and important backgrounds to a lot of these guys. And Lewis Morris is from a pretty important family. He had an uncle that was a Pennsylvania colonial governor. He has a half-brother that would sign and actually do a lot of the writing of the U.S. Constitution and Governor Morris. And he was from a very loyalist area. He was from what is now sort of Westchester County or the Bronx area. But he wasn't loyalist. He was one that kind of embraced that cause. And he was in a lot of 1776. He's back and forth from Philadelphia to New York because he's involved in the New York militia. And of course, as I mentioned a minute ago, New York is being invaded in 1776. So he's definitely one whose house was damaged in the fighting and his family had to flee. He's another one that's clearly impacted. And then in his family situation, like a lot of these guys, most of these folks were British. That's sort of their identification of themselves. So it's a big step to say we're leaving and we're fighting against our own country to leave it because we don't like what's happening. And he had a brother that was in the British Army and eventually was a major general in the British Army. I'm sure, you know, that's going to have obviously a negative impact on two brothers when they're literally fighting on both sides of the same question. So you see a lot of that with a lot of families. And, you know, that's sort of one of those tragedies of war in a situation like this, because it is those elements of a civil war. We're sort of fighting against ourselves in some ways.
Yeah. And is it true that three of Lewis Morris's sons actually ended up fighting under Washington? So there they are, not only struggling with their identity of who they are, but then his sons being sent off knowing the real likelihood that they could be injured or killed in this fight for freedom.
Oh, yeah. What greater sacrifice can you make, right, than having your children risking their lives for a cause? For a parent, that has to be kind of a terrifying thing to face. Absolutely.
Now we turn our attention to Pennsylvania. Nine signed the Declaration, but five of those were not even there for the debate. National Park Ranger Adam Duncan.
Certainly, I think Benjamin Franklin is the most recognized. I mean, he was, in his own lifetime, one of the most famous people in the world. His name can still be identified no matter what country you go to. People have heard at least of his name. They may not be able to identify him with his science and his inventions, but, you know, they at least know him. Probably he gets elevated because he was a signer of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, of course. And most people think that they know Ben Franklin. I've been studying him for 20 years at least, and I still cannot get an essence of his persona. He was a very private person for being so famous. You get glimpses of his character, but putting it all together is a challenge to many historians. I mean, certainly he has a lot of one-liners, a lot of quips that come from his time as a writer for Poor Richard's Almanac, but he was elevated because he also knew how people perceived him and how people saw him, especially while he was a young man. He made a point every morning of coming out of his shop as a printer, being seen as carrying heavy things, because he wanted people to be like, oh, that young Franklin over there, he's a hard worker, he's a go-getter. And he applied that as well. He knew when to keep his mouth shut. He knew when to speak up, and he understood the people that he was around, whether if he was in England or if he was in France. He spent a lot of time overseas, away from Philadelphia. And in England, he was seen as too much of an American. And in the colonies, he was seen too much of an Englishman. So he kind of has this reputation where everybody thinks they know Benjamin Franklin. But really, when you do a deeper dive into his life, his character and his persona, you discover a whole lot that really just talking about him in a few sentences, you can't really capture.
National Park Ranger Matt Eiffel.
Thomas Jefferson once said about him that when he sat in Congress with him, that he often didn't speak except on the really important questions. He basically said he and Washington both were kind of like that. They didn't necessarily speak a lot, but when something really important came up, that's when they were going to make their points.
Yeah, Franklin was very involved behind the scenes. I mean, he's on the Committee of Five, which was tasked for drafting the Declaration of Independence. Thomas Jefferson led the charge. As John Adams said, you're 10 times the writer than I. Thomas Jefferson would go to Franklin and Adams the most. Philip Livingston's also on that. Did I get that right, Matt, or is it Robert
Livingston? Livingston, his cousin.
His cousin, yeah. There's five Livingstons in the family, so sometimes it's...
I know. It's confusing, isn't it? All these Livingstons and Lewises and Morrises.
Yeah, but so Jefferson, looks up to Franklin. Many of them did. I mean, he's the most famous person in the world, really, other than George Washington. So those are two figures that kind of had some significant influence. Of course, Washington at this point is out fighting as the general of the Continental Army, but he started off as a representative in Congress.
Yeah, representative of Virginia. I think of Ben Franklin as kind of like this quiet influencer. And he's observing the room. He's taking it all in.
Yeah, he's there taking it in. And then when they adjourn, he has the side conversations. He comes up with strategies and things like that. He was a very tactful politician as well.
The way he often communicates stuff, it's almost by, he's a storyteller. You know, it's like a parable almost that he throws things out to sort of make his point. He'll go through a long story, and at the end you go, oh, okay, that's what he just said. So, you know, he's good. He gets people's attention that way because you kind of have to listen to see where he's going to go with this story that he's telling.
These folks really came from all walks of life, from the wealthy to the merely surviving. Pennsylvania's George Taylor actually came from Ireland and worked as an indentured servant to an ironmaster before signing the Declaration. Who were some other folks from Pennsylvania that signed the Declaration?
Like George Taylor, Franklin came from like 16 of 17 kids, and, you know, he was started off self-made. James Wilson from Pennsylvania is one of the really interesting ones. He was born in Scotland and was educated, and he came over to Pennsylvania in the 1760s. He studied law under John Dickinson, who was one of the guys who actually didn't sign the Declaration. Not that he was necessarily opposed to independence, but he thought we were not in a good position to declare independence yet, that the war wasn't necessarily going well enough in our direction, and we didn't have any help from Europe yet. We hadn't yet gotten France to help us out. So Wilson was kind of had studied law under him and had taught at what became the University of Penn, which Franklin founded that school. And he kind of voted early on, Wilson had, to sort of delay these discussions. But then he eventually sided with Franklin the last days as we're voting on independence. So he kind of came around to that side in the course of the debating. And then later in life, he would be a big part of writing the U.S. Constitution. In fact, most folks give him credit for the words, "We the People," for example. And then he kind of has a sad ending to his own life. I guess he always probably worried about having money, so he was always trying to buy land, and that's, of course, is in that time period, land speculation, as they'd call it, often doesn't work out in your favor, and he ended up serving on the U.S. Supreme Court, but having to leave Pennsylvania because he was going to be arrested for debt. and he died at the home of another Supreme Court justice in North Carolina, basically having fled arrest, which, if you can imagine, the scandal of a Supreme Court justice taking off. So he has this very up and down life. But during the war, his house was attacked. But it wasn't for being loyalist or patriot in terms of the British. It was actually Pennsylvania politics, because we wrote a new constitution and some people liked it and some people didn't. So the forces on one side attacked his house at one point in time.
Happy Independence Day to you. We appreciate you tuning in amid your 4th of July festivities. You're listening to a special edition of the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm Tracy Lynn, and I'm joined by National Park Service Rangers Matt Eiffel and Adam Duncan. We're looking at some of the signers of the Declaration of Independence from New York and Pennsylvania as delegates to the Second Continental Congress back in 1776 chose to break away from England, and the struggle and sacrifice that came with it.
Again, it goes to the fact that this is such a complicated period of time for us, and a lot of these guys are trying to figure out exactly where they stand on all these different questions, because not only are we declaring independence, but we're making new states out of colonies, and we have to create state governments, and a lot of these guys are involved in that story as well.
National Park Ranger Adam Duncan.
There's also George Clymer in the park. There's actually a statue called the Signer. It's not any one single signer, but it's based upon George Clymer of Pennsylvania. And I think it kind of reminds visitors to the park that these guys, every single one of them, whether you're from Massachusetts, Virginia, Pennsylvania, these guys were taking a leap of faith by signing the Declaration of Independence and putting, as they said, their fortunes, their lives, and their honor on the line. I think that's very important for people to remember. It's not a nice polished ball of history that you tend to get. And there's a lot of what I like to call grandma's history, you know, stories and fables that are told and that are based a little bit upon the historical record. But over the time, especially in the 19th century, some of the signers get more attributed to them than what actually happened. And I think some of the Pennsylvania guys are good examples of that as well.
National Park Ranger Matt Eiffel.
Clymer, he's another one that came from a hard background. He was an orphan when he was 1 year old. Fortunately, had a wealthy uncle that brought him up, and he was pretty early kind of on that radical side. He's another one whose house was vandalized by the British, and apparently that's on purpose after the Battle of Brandywine in 1777. And I'm sure, again, it's one of those cases that somebody that's an American goes, hey, if you guys march a mile over that way, you can take out this house of this guy that had, you know, signed the Declaration of Independence.
Once a delegate to Congress, George Washington often wrote about Providence and God in his life and in the affairs of men. What about faith among the other men in Congress?
One of the signers from New Jersey is John Witherspoon. And Witherspoon was a pastor and was the head at that time of Princeton University. Obviously, one of his duties would be to train other ministers. So he's one of the signers. So, yeah, you do have guys that definitely have that faith, and some of them were very involved in their local churches, like William Floyd, for example, was very involved in his church out on Long Island. So, yeah, you do have a good mix. And then you have others that are sort of less inclined. Franklin gets a little bit more interested in religion as he gets older. Growing up, I think, as basically a Congregationalist, a Puritan in Massachusetts, kind of in a theocratic government in Massachusetts that he kind of rebelled against a little bit as a teenager, so that probably kind of put him on a negative path. But as he got older, he kind of started seeing the light, so to speak, in some things. So it's always a good mix of people, I think, when you look at them.
Thank you. The lawmakers were not the only ones involved in the sacrifice and challenges of forming a new nation, independent from Britain.
To touch on the wives and the families, many of the signers, but also many of the soldiers' wives, got heavily involved during the war, and especially after independence. They're organizing drives for clothes, for medicine, for food, for the troops, and they're really kind of behind the scenes, and they don't get a whole lot of credit in terms of their more notable husbands, whether they were signers or if they were even officers and soldiers of the Continental Army. They're the ones behind the scenes that are really, I think, suffering the most and helping the most towards the cause. And many wives would follow their husbands during the war in the camp, while they're encamped at Valley Forge and Morristown and these various places. And I think that's an important part of the story as well, is that there's a lot more people that we don't know their names that were involved and were responsible for American independence. And then there are signers of the Declaration of Independence that barely get talked about. I think a lot of people outside of the New York area wouldn't have known Francis Lewis, or Arthur Middleton of South Carolina, or John Morton, he's another Pennsylvania signer, or sometimes Caesar Rodney.
National Park Ranger Matt Eiffel.
I'll pick up on what Adam was saying, because there are a lot of family struggles, because the members of the Continental Congress aren't getting paid. And a lot of the time, we have a hard time paying the soldiers that are fighting in the war. So, there's not necessarily income coming in. A lot of these guys have left businesses and lands. And a lot of times that means that the wife and the kids now have to take care of if they're a farmer, they have to take care of the farm. Or if they run a store, they have to take care of the business. So it is kind of a lot is left to the family. So not only would you be raising the kids, but trying to keep up the business at the same time, or the farm, or whatever it may be. And then if the war comes to your area, again, then you have to face that. Do we flee? Do we leave? Do we stay? What's going to happen to us if the fighting is literally at our house or in our town? Think of any war that's going on in the world today, how scary it is for people that are just living there and living through this. So, when you think of July 4th, there's so many of these stories of so many of these people that are making sacrifices, that they don't have enough control over the circumstances around them, and yet so many of them just stood up to be counted, as we would say. It's remarkable. And that's where we're so lucky today. The people we had, this collection of men that came to Philadelphia, is an astounding group of people, and they really created what we are today with all their efforts and their sacrifices.
Thanks for coming along with us on this special Family Life Noon Report as we look back on Independence Day and the challenges and sacrifices it took to make it happen. May we never forget those freedoms and instead help to pass those and other blessings on to others. I'm Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.